Okay. Special guest, Mitch. Okay. So here goes. Now, what we have in this, as we know, the most famous thing in this week's Parsha is that the entire story is repeated twice. That doesn't happen too often. One of the longest chapters in the Torah, I think it's 66 Psukim, if I remember correctly. And it's really because of what we call in America live events, and then the retelling of the live events. As we pointed out over the past several years, I actually wrote a sefer on it, reprinted an old sefer on it, and put some footnotes in. When you look at the original events, as opposed to the new events of the retelling of it, there are literally endless differences. If you're reading it in 2 seconds on Shabbos afternoon, you probably will not pick up most of them. But if you're actually paying attention, and if you superimpose them on top of each other, there are literally 150 plus differences. In a minor amount of Sukkim, because the whole chapter, 66 books, Sukkim, split in half in the first few, the last one in the camp. So in the span of 15, 20 Sukkim repeated, it's a whole different story. The actual events of what the Torah tells us occurred, and his repetition seems like it's the same story, but it's nothing to do with the same story. And most of it was done purposeful. I don't want to use the word manipulatively, but that's really what it was, in order to force the future family to join in with the marriage ceremony. And he was trying to, like, you know, you're bluffing when you're playing cards. You want to show a few hands and say, listen, we don't need you. On the other hand, you want to say, we really love you. And he's doing both sides at the same time for the actual events as opposed to the events that he was saying over. And it worked. First masterclass lesson in how to be a manipulative matchmaker, right? Mitch is a kid in Shaduchim. He knows exactly what we're talking about here. But okay, so now, what we're going to discuss is one pasuk tonight. One pasuk tonight, which affects us. I looked around, I got to be honest, 20 plus answers. We're not going to do 20 plus answers tonight, because odds are I'll get sidetracked. But there are at least 20 answers given by the commentator, so it's a real thing. So what happens is, we have them meeting each other. After the story occurs, now let's go back and meet the folks, meet the family. Right? Literally, you can make a comedy movie about what's going on here. And they come back to the family, and they bring him, it says here, the man, we're on 32 now, the man entered the house and unmuzzled the camels. Okay, that's not even a repetition of what, a lot of these things, that's what's amazing about the repetition. Not all of these are actually part of the quotes. Some of this reality what occurred. He gave straw, and he fed them, the camels, the water, the baby's feet, that food was set before him. Him's a big word there. Seems like Eliezer, if you know, came with a crowd. Seems like the food was only in front of him. But before they did, he had the most famous quote of anti-any Jewish simcha of all time. No, I'm not going to eat. First, let's speak. Usually it's when two people meet, they take out a glass of wine and we say, let's drink, let's ink, let's toast, let's roast, right? We're doing all of that. And then we'll sit down and have the conversation. Food first. Here it's let's talk, not eat. That's the name of the class. Let's talk, not eat. So the obvious question is, wait a second, that's not the commonplace. When you walk into someone's house, that's not usually what you say at a dinner, invited to a party. No, let's hold off on the food. Let's have a conversation first. No, nobody's looking for conversations. Okay, we're looking for the food. So the question asked by the commentators, possibly even early ones, depending on how you use some of those, but I'm not sure if they're really addressing it directly, but definitely indirectly, is why was this the order of what Eliezer was doing in the family? We have to remember, everything Eliezer did, to say it was genius times genius is still an understatement. Because it's genius times genius to a billionth degree. Everything that he was saying and doing. So this is not even a repetition concept of saying something that's against what occurred. He's showing up now and saying, hold off on the food, let's have a conversation first. And the question is going to be why. And there'll be a lot of, again, I think I came up with at least 20, 25 different answers. I doubt we'll do all of them, but we'll start with the first one, which is more famous. Question if you like it or not, but a more famous one. The rule is, we today, in ancient Judaism, there were two ceremonies that occurred. It was engagement and then marriage. Engagement doesn't mean we do an engagement today of saying, will you marry me? That does not do that. I mean, it might be, but there's a lot. We do it today under the chuppah. We do both. So in Jewish law, someone is engaged and married within a span of a couple minutes. Depends on when the guy speaks and how good he is at reading Aramaic. But usually within those few minutes, we have engagement and marriage, right? Now, the rule is, on the day, now we do it today, today's only one day, so it's easy. On the day of engagement and marriage, we'll just use a marriage from here on forth, day of the marriage, the bride and groom have a serious custom. They don't eat that day. They fast that day. No eating that day. We'll discuss the reason in a minute. The Baditcha Barov gives a famous answer to this question. Why did he say, let's talk before eat? Because his point was, listen, I'm not allowed to eat today. Why? Eliezer was what we call the, not messenger.
Shliach.
Yeah, shliach in English. What's shliach in English? He was the
agent.
Power of attorney, agent. Power of attorney agent for the marriage ceremony. And he, Baditza Rav is saying this. And therefore, he had the same rules. Power of attorney and agent is real. You are taking the place of the original person. Since he's taken the place of the original person, you know what that meant? He's not allowed to eat either. So he's saying, listen, hold off on the food pre-wedding. We don't eat. That's what the Baditza Rav says. The commentators ask right away, or they point out right away, oh, is that true? What's the reason why a groom and bride don't eat that day? And then we see if it's applicable to the agent. Not everything is transferred to an agent. That's not exactly. The agent doesn't gain 6 inches because a tall guy told to be my agent. Not the way it works. So how did that get? Let's look at the reasons here. So there are two famous reasons. And these two reasons, by the way, eventually we'll have maybe a share about it. If you go through it, there's a lot of practical differences in law. One we'll discuss tonight. So now, and it sounds like this. One of the differences in practical law. First, let's give the reason, then we'll do the difference. Two reasons. One reason is, as we know, a bride and groom on the day of their wedding are equal to the rest of us on Yom Kippur. It's a day of atonement, a day of forgiveness. It's a serious day. Day of atonement, day of forgiveness. You know what we do on the day of atonement, day of forgiveness? We don't eat. You know what that means? They don't eat. Now, it's hard, this is the question they ask on the Baditza of Rav, on the Kedushas Levi. It's hard to believe that the agent of the ceremony has his sins forgiven. It's a little bit hard to imagine the Baditza of Rav meant that. He's vague. Hard to believe that he would assume that, and that's the first reason. But there is a second reason. Second reason is practical. We don't want people eating and drinking what people do when they're nervous, jittery before a wedding. You know what then happens?
She can somebody, do something on the dress.
That, not bad. The better answer is someone doesn't show up. They don't actually show up to the wedding, or 2.5 weeks later, they're claiming they were at the wedding, but they weren't in the right sound of mind, and therefore the whole thing was a mistake. We want to make sure there's no, you're going to be there with a clear head. That is practically applicable as well to an agent. We don't want, remember, if the agent messes up, that's a reason to null the contract. So we want to make sure all the lawyers in the room are also going to know what's going on. So if the Baditza Rav meant this, some say that's what he must have meant, that Eliezer was not going to eat. Of course he wanted to eat. He's saying, listen, there's no eating until we know for sure there's going to be a wedding there. When the wedding ceremony is performed, we eat. Now, so one of the differences we just pointed out might be an agent, a messenger. A second difference between what the reason is why bride and groom fast. Is it because of the Day of Atonement? Is it because we want to make sure they're clear-headed? Would be, at what point do you break the fast? So let's say European custom, they get married at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Not when it gets dark at 4 o'clock. Even when it gets dark at 7 o'clock. So they didn't eat from the time they woke up. And now they're fitting into their outfits because they lost a pound and a half, right? Then they get to the wedding, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, long speech. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Are they allowed to eat now or not? Some want to say, wait a second, depends on the reason. If the reason is stay clear, stay healthy, stay normal till the wedding, at 3:59, eat because the excuse has ended. But if it's a day of atonement is not based on when the ceremony takes place. As soon as the ceremony takes place, you're no more being atoned for. No, it's a full day process. Yom Kippur, by the way, if you eat on Yom Kippur, you're supposed to eat if you got someone sick or accidentally, or whatever the reason is, you still fast the rest of the day. It's still a day of atonement. You don't give up on the rest of it. You don't say, oops, slipped up. I took that drink in the morning. It's time to take out some pizza. No, it doesn't work that way. So the Day of Atonement means a full day, which means the Day of Atonement would mean that when Eliezer is saying here, let's talk, then eat, that would be the same day. Okay, then it fits in and saying clear-headed. So let's go this slowly. But Baditza Rav says the reason why Eliezer said, hold off on the food, let's get this conversation done, is because he was an agent. Agent represents bride and groom. Bride and groom going to fast. Later commentators pointed, oh, but Baditza Rav, he must mean one side of the equation. He must mean the reason to fast is to be clear-headed, not reason to fast Day of Atonement. And there are two things that make sense of that. You know why that makes sense? Because the agent would still have to fast in that case. Day of Atonement might not have to. And the agent will be allowed to eat as soon as the ceremony ends because it's based on clear-headedness. So they point this out in the Baditza Rav, that it must be, the Baditza Rav is assuming that the reason for the fast in general is based on clear-headedness, and therefore the agent should fast, and therefore once the ceremony is over, he does not have to fast. That will be long answer number one on why Eliezer said to hold off on the food until we get to the end of the conversation. Rule number one. Number two. And again, there's many, many, many answers. Yosef's, Eliezer's first words, excuse me, thank you. Food was set before him, but he said, I will not eat until I have spoken my place. And, again, a lot of pronouns here. He, which would be the family, said, speak. First words out of his mouth. What's the first words out of Eliezer's mouth? True, it's a question. Here goes. And he said, what? A servant of Avram am I. Okay, most of us don't speak like that. But that's how the Old English speaks. A servant of Avram am I. So some want to point out. Yeah, of course, that's the first words. Because the reason he held off on the food for the speech was, of course, we're going to say it's a long, beautiful speech, potentially full of inconsistencies and misdirection. But bottom line is, what's the first words out of his mouth? Let's go pure simple. First words are, Abraham's servant. So many commentators want to point out. It's an easy one. Michael's already thinking it. He was saying, before the food here, we need a check. You know, we got a check. Chol Yisrael. Mitchell, we in the Chol Yisrael, right? Well, I got to check the food here. So let's talk this out first. You know what house I come from, by the way? Vegan. Obviously not, right? I'm coming from the house that's high standards on what is edible. So let's leave, before we decide just to dive in here, let's figure out what's available for me. And that's why let me speak my entire speech. No, that's not what he meant. He meant, thanks for the food. I got to check on a couple things here first. Very simple. Host has to do it. And he wasn't blaming. He wasn't saying, it's me. Imagine I come to Michael's house. I said, Rabbi, you want to have some cake? Michael, love you. I think you're funny. But bottom line, I don't trust your wife's cooking. Not because I don't trust her taste buds. Worse, I don't trust your holiness. Pretty offensive. But if I say, Michael, of course I trust you. But I work for the guy behind me. And he insists that I eat this stuff. You know, that's part of my employment. Part of my employment is I eat under his standards. Not so offensive. Go, Charles.
That answer seems to contradict the first answer of him being a shliach for wedding, because then it would be Yitzchak's servant.
Well, Yitzchak would have a high standard of kashrus.
But he said he was a servant of Avram.
Very good, very good.
Shliach could only be the servant. If he wants to fast as per the groom fasting, then he would be Yitzchak's servant.
Very nice.
He's not, he's Avram's servant.
Did not think of it. I will say, as an answer, but I like what you're saying. So even though I'm giving you an answer on the spot, Just for the argument's sake, devil's advocate, he could say that the words servant and messenger are not always synonymous. Meaning, I work for Abraham. He's my boss. He's my employee. Oh, by the way, this conversation here, I'm representing Yitzhak because Abraham set it up. But I do happen to be, I like your answer. Okay. So we have two, you're following, Ben? Two good answers. I think good answers. Two answers while we're holding on. Answer three, because I talk fast. Right? Instead of spreading this out over 26 different Tuesday nights for the next 12 years, we're doing this. We're going to get through a lot of them tonight. Number three is a good one. And applies to practical law. Applies to practical law. Number three is this. As we said a minute ago, food was set before him. And we said before that Eliezer came with a group of people. Now, there is a rule in law, applies in many cases. And a practical law, by the way. Maybe the reason why I never went to Michael's house for a cake, maybe, is this. When you go into, there's a law. When you go into someone's house and you're looking around, this happens when asking someone, they go to Israel, you know, they set up a Shabbos in Israel. Charles's kids being, I need a place for Shabbos. And they say, hey, we got a guy in Meir Sharm. And they bring you out, like a soup. And you're like, is that really soup? I don't know what that is. It looks like, and like, okay. And you're like, you're sipping, like, oh, I'll wait for the main meal. Oh, that is the main meal. What about, I'll wait for dessert. That's also dessert, by the way. Yeah, the whole meal is in that little bowl, right? So the rule of thumb is in general, that you're not supposed to be, you know, fressing ice, pigging out in English, at someone's house as a guest when you notice, wait a second, the host's kids don't seem to have any food. Why am I only getting the chicken? The one piece of hairy chicken is on my plate, and everyone else got nothing. So, and now, that applies under, we were trying to get combined answers so we don't get stuck here until next Wednesday. Is that not only is that applicable if we assume that the host has no money, you watch him as kids. But it also is applicable, hence the Michael joke, if you find out that someone's extensively cheap and he's begrudgingly, and he's like counting calories. Literally, he's counting your calories, but not in calories, but in pennies. So you go into someone's house who's wealthy and his kids are, even if his kids are full, even if the kids have big plates, some people give the kids, they don't give the guests. And you're realizing that, I know this grumpy guy. He doesn't want to give me that second piece of cake. So you got to be careful. So back to our story right now. Our story is Eliezer walks over. Ben's already nodding. What does it say? What does it say? Food was set, what? Before him, singular. Eliezer's got the crew. The what do you call it from that song, the rodeo? What do you call those guys? The
posse.
No, but no, that's that song from years ago. Where's that? Where's you need him? Got the name right now. Let's take the show on the road. Roadies, that's what they're called.
Roadies.
How do you call roadies?
Roadies, yeah.
Roadies. So imagine that. He's looking around. He's like, hey, buddy, I got 20 people took the same trip as me. They could use a drink of water. And nothing's coming forward. His answer is, oh, you know what? Let's hold off on the food. Let me talk a little bit. But his real reason is, because the law says, when the host isn't forthcoming, I gave two reasons now. That's food of an answer. Either not forthcoming because he's cheap. Either not forthcoming because he doesn't have. Same idea. In rule, applies the same to the potential guest. Don't be fressing out. So I think we already got four answers. We have four answers in. I think we got Braditsiva. We got kosher. We got cheap time. Cheap and no money. Four answers so far. Next one. Next one I like a lot. It's mine. Next one is this. Eliezer had an issue here. My Americanized version. As we said, master shotgun. Masterclass lessons on how to be an amazing shotgun. Taking a story that seems, that's like, put these two pictures together and find 27 differences, and you can't. Because that's how good the words are. He was speaking in two tones. Everything's working there. But Eliezer had a problem. Because you know what the problem is when you're repeating a story? You got to make sure all the people around you are repeating the same story. If everyone around you is repeating the same story, the house of cards is going to fall. Right? That's a big problem. It's a big problem when you're claiming a hospital destroyed and 500 people died and the hospital's still there the next morning when everyone wakes up. And you're like, wait a second. But the hospital got destroyed last night. No, the hospital's actually right there. So it's a little bit of a problem sometimes. What you need to do, you got a couple options here. So Eliezer picked one of the options. I'm going to get my version out first before the conversation becomes a conversation where everyone puts their input. I don't want to be cut off by Rivka. Rivka was there. The story's about her. She's an eyewitness to the accounts. And I'm about to sort of say the truth, but like from my angled version of what the truth is, and again, all Eliezer did everything kosher. No question about it. Eliezer ever wrong. But he's like, let me make sure, I don't know who Rivka is. I don't know how, I mean, I'm assuming she's a Baal Chesed. Do I know she's so smart to realize all my manipulative moves right now? You know, is she on the same A game as I am? The house of card
same
game?
Same way.
Right, is she on the same wave? I have a good idea. Before we sit around and we're all getting light and brevity, is that the word? And we're all schmoozing away. Before that happens, I have a good idea. Let me get my version out first. Hopefully she'll have enough common sense to keep quiet. And if not, I'm adding on. You know, the first story you hear, you won't believe. There's still a lot of people out there who the hospital's not around. People believe first instant that they're go keeps.
There's another person that can be involved in messing up the story with his mother because she came to her mother first.
Maybe.
And we don't know what she said.
It happens to be amazingly, because I want to show you some excellent Akiva. It's since everyone's on the same page, 114. Now, he said, Akiva's pointing out to verse 28, same page. The maiden, that's Rivka. By the way, you have to know every single word that you can write a whole book on. When they call her by name, when they call her maiden, it's unbelievable. The maiden ran and told her mother's household. Of Hebrew, it says about the household. Let me just see 1 second. What? Mother's household. Okay. Okay. It says her mother's house, which means you went to her, but okay. Household according to these events. So Akiva's adding on that, by the way, there's another person who already heard the story. That happens to be, if you go to the Hebrew side, very important, Hebrew side of that, will be the fourth line, third word on page one. That's actually page 114. Page 114. The first word is, excuse me, Lebeis Ima. Mother's home. Next word is ka dvarim ha'elu. And what does the ka as a prefix in ka dvarim ha'elu mean? The ka means normally like.
Not exactly.
Not exactly. Charles on his A game. You hear what's going on here? That means that, now, doesn't mean Eliezer knew this, by the way. It wasn't in that conversation. But when Rivka ran to her mother, she also seemed to realize, I'm not exactly going to say exactly what occurred, according to some, that she only said like these, what's the word, words or events? These events. She reported like the events. BBC. Right? Like the events. So the truth is, very good, by the way. So I don't know, but again, Eliezer didn't know it either way. Your point is good either way. Eliezer has to speak before she speaks, and now you're adding on her mother as well. I'm agreeing. I'm just saying as a side point to note that it's beautiful because Eliezer, Rivka is already on the same page, and she also wasn't already given all the exact information required, necessary. And again, some of the stuff makes sense. For example, one of the more famous things that they changed was that when you read the original story, live events, the water arose miraculously for her. When they repeated that conversation, they left that out. Now, Rivka, now I'm making this right now. Rivka might have left that out because, well, arrogance. I'm not going to go with that. Eliezer might have left it out because, you know what? You're going to think I'm smoking the hashish. So I'm going to leave it out for a different reason. So they both might have left out the same detail coming from different places if they all left out the same details. But it doesn't mean necessarily everything they changed was exactly the same. Each one, again, Eliezer's motivation was to make this shit up done. I'm assuming Rivka was also. But again, different viewpoints coming in to make sure the story sticks. Next.
Or maybe Rivka would appear to her family as a miracle worker and then the price goes up.
Excellent, actually. That could be on both of them, Rivka and Eliezer. Right, because Eliezer's got a real game. In many of the other cases that the rabbis bring down, that a lot of times he was like, you can't insult your daughter's not, but you also want to show that the stock ain't that high. We have at one point he said, by the way, option B, Abraham gave me option B. He says it. The reason why he's saying is, okay, so arrogant here. It's a negotiation. Let's figure it out. Very good, though. Very good that, correct. And that'll be both. Rivka and Eliezer saying, I don't want the stock too high. I want the family allowing this to work out. Good. Next approach is going to have potentially three different approaches under this one umbrella. Next approach is, start with the easiest one possible. I can't remember who it is right now. Drawing a blank right now, I can't remember. But there have been rabbis, grand rabbis, over the last 100 years. It might be the wrong term, but I don't know why I just blanked out. But many who had a concept, I'll put the word vow, I don't like that word because it's much stronger than it might be, but yes, who were very serious about not eating non-mitzvah food. Non-mitzvah food. What does non-mitzvah food mean? Any meal that doesn't not called a mitzvah meal, they didn't eat by. So for example, some of these great rabbis would make, it's easy, Charles does it, make a siyum every day. Finish a masechta every day. Every time you finish a masechta, you make a siyum, that's a sudas mitzvah. Easy to do, right? So they're like, oh, it's 7 o'clock, I got an hour. Oh, should I do Shabbos above Basra? Oh, I'll do Shabbos. And polish off 100 and something blocks, right? Not a big deal, right? So every meal, and there were rabbis less than 100 years ago after this, who were very serious about this. No reshus, voluntary meals, no snacks, right? So easy to say, if a rabbi 100 years ago had this deal, can't far to say, he hasn't, Avram had this deal. So the other saying, oh, thanks for the offer of the food. We got to make this a Sudas Mitzvah. What's a Sudas Mitzvah? Number one, an engagement party is a Sudas Mitzvah. So yes. Anyway, but so it's not far to think that Eliezer had the same concept. I'm not eating. Sorry. Thank you, but no thank you. Got to be a mitzvah food. How do I get a mitzvah meal? I got the best way. I'm going to tell you the story. Let's get an engagement. That's number one. Number two, another way to make a mitzvah meal. Brought down on Hanukkah. Coming up. What do we do on a Hanukkah Suda? Of course, we go to Hanukkah Suda. But the Mishnah Berurah brings down, even though it's like a quasi-situation, is there an obligation? Maybe we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks. Who's on the line there? I can't even see who's on the line. If there's an obligation to eat a meal on Hanukkah every day on Hanukkah, what do we do with that? The Mishnah Berurah and many others have an easy advice. You know what? We're not sure it's mitzvah. Make it a mitzvah meal. How do you make a mitzvah meal? Easiest one. Say some Torah. You say some Torah because of mitzvah meal. At what point are you going to do it? Eliezer says, listen, by the way, Lavan, I'm not relying on your speech to be full of Torah. What we're going to do is before we start the meal, let me tell you a story. By the way, you know what Rashi says? Medrash, every word of story out of Eliezer's mouth is Torah. So Eliezer's just turning to him and saying, listen, let's make this a Torah meal. Okay? How do we do Torah meal? I'm going to tell you some Torah. Like we do on Chanukah. Two things. Either engagement party, you know, or Torah in the beginning. Now, someone to say that even if you don't always do a mitzvah meal, you're what we would call a normal person, that just crossed out, a regular human being who doesn't always do this, there is a concept of when you're on, I'm going to say meal, but not only meal, when you are coming from a journey, a trip, the first thing, or your house, by the way, walking in, not when you're sitting around, first time you enter your home from outside on a walk, longer, better, do a mitzvah right away. Mitzvah meal will be included. What does that mean? Because it's like this. Well, let's say it takes you an hour, you're leaving your job and it takes you an hour to get home. Now, when you're going home that hour, whatever you're doing, learning, YouTube, it doesn't make a difference. Whatever you're doing, you can look at this two ways. I am just randomly going home. How do you look at it? I'm leaving my office or I'm going to my house. Every step becomes something. If you get into your home and the first thing you do is a mitzvah, eating's easy because you shake a lulav tomorrow night and you come home, we will send the van for you, right? That we will check you in, right? You can't shake a lulav tomorrow night. That's not a mitzvah. But if you come home and the first thing you do is a mitzvah, think of it, if I'm going to learn for the first 10 minutes, 3 minutes, then what happens is Hashem, if you have the right thought process, makes every moment of that journey a mitzvah journey now. I'm not just leaving my office or heading home. I am heading to learn for those 3 minutes. I'm giving you three minutes, because now my entire road, every step of the way, became a mitzvah. So what Eliezer was saying here, thank you for the invitation to your home. I just spent X amount of time on the road. By the way, Eliezer was easy. It's only one day. But I spent X amount of time on the road. That's what we might potentially call waste of time. I don't want that on my record, waste of time. I'm actively fulfilling every single minute. You know what that means? I got to do a mitzvah right away. You know what that means? Shut up. Don't bring out the food. Let me tell you a Dvar Torah. I'm giving you a Dvar Torah. That's a mitzvah move to do. Mitzvahs all around for everybody. Okay, so we have three ways, or two and a half, of why the main answer on this umbrella is turn this into a mitzvah. Turn this into a mitzvah. Next one. Are we still with me here? Now, this I should have said before. The same way, did I say it? He was saying, it was included automatically. He's saying, I don't want to eat anything. And then if we all sit and eat, and then you say you want to renege on the deal, you're going to claim you were drinking and drunk. Like we say, everyone by a wedding. So he was saying similar. I don't know if that really included the other answer. It means be warned. We're coming into this with a clear head right now. Okay. Another answer. A little bit of a wild one. Mitzvah of a good smile on my own. A little wild. In the old days, at one point in history, Adija, we didn't have what we call a nusach. What's that in English? A text. Set text. Better word. We did not have a set text of prayers. At one point in time, there was no Shemoneh Esrei that everyone said universally. That happened, of course, it happened a very long time already, a couple thousand years almost, but at one point we didn't have it. Now, this still might have been an obligation to pray, but it was, we'll say, coming out of your heart. Okay. What about a bracha rishon? Nowadays, eat an apple, you make a bar creates, piece of meat, shakal nevid var. There's a concept to say, before you eat something, let's make a blessing. And the blessing is, really, sort of thanking Hashem for getting that piece of food from that area to this plate. Okay. It's possible to say that what Eliezer was saying is, hold off, let me speak a little bit, would be his blessing, Rishonim, his first blessing. What's wild, what I'm saying is, it's not limited to him actually making just a blessing. In the old days, since there was no standard text, so what Eliezer was saying was, let me give a toast here. Let me tell you my entire day here. Because when would the blessing be obligated? Meal to meal, you gotta be. What his blessing was is, I'm not just thinking I got the fruit on my plate. That's what the rabbis did for us today. They love us. They're like, I don't want to make a long Shemoneh Esrei every time you got an apple. We would all lose a lot of weight that way, by the way. If every time you had to eat something, you had to say Shemoneh Esrei, we'd all be a third of the size.
That's why a lot of people don't eat bread.
Yes, sad to say, I'm a victim. I'm part of that problem. Many rabbis always say, like, the big rabbis go crazy. Like, you're not going to wash because you don't want to spend. And remember, the rabbis take much longer. They can't remember what they're saying. You won't spend the 81 seconds that it takes to. Yeah, right. So, but in the old days, Eliezer was a grand rabbi. I'm not only talking about the food. I want to tell you what happened today by me. By the way, today is what he's talking about. I got here today. Let me tell you about a blessing I'm going to make. God had me super fast travel. Is that even a word? He had me fly out here in crazy time. That's part of, I'm sitting out for a meal now. Part of my blessing before the meal is to tell you from my previous meal. By the way, my previous meal was this morning 80,000 miles away.
That's the mitzvah.
So I'm not even going to mitzvah. I'm saying he's saying his bracha rishayna,
right.
His bracha rishayna, which we do in, do we do? I'm not going to ask that. When we do that bracha rishayna, sometimes too late, food's in our mouth already, by the way. When we make that bracha rishayna, which takes us 4 seconds, Eliezer did it the right way, extended it out to cover the entire previous meal from meal to meal. We're going to stop here then. I want to thank everyone for coming. We will not continue this next week. I don't think so. But no, almost any answer you give someone might have said, because I think I tracked down about 27 of them.